Welcome to Scouts Out, an original science fiction story by A.A. Foringer, set in his Outfitters universe. All of the Outfitters universe stories are available in ebook format at smashwords.com. If you would like to support the author or read the story for yourself, please buy the book at smashwords.com.
Chapter 41, 30 September, 2152.
"We are now within their cannon's range," Yoshida announced. "Any change in their weapon status?" Leo asked.
"None. All weapons are fully charged, and their targeting scanners are locked onto us," Gutenberg replied.
"Okay, people, let's take it easy. Remember, this is their first time meeting someone in space. They are just being cautious," Leo announced over the intercom.
"If they're being any more cautious, we'd be dead," Fia responded back.
"Keep the attitude to yourself, Chief," Leo fired back, agreeing, but not wanting the angry mood to spread any further.
"Their tractor beam is cycling again, Cap. I think it's going to blow a circuit in about 10 more minutes, Fanucci asserted.
"Okay, I'm going to call them and warn them." Leo thumbed the proper channel. "Peace Quester, Peace Quester, this is the Arrogant Lion."
There was a long pause. "Arrogant Lion, this is the Peace Quester."
"Yes, Quester. Our sensors show that your tractor beam you have locked onto us is going to overload in about 10 minutes. If you want us to maintain this position while you shut down for repairs, please let us know."
The voice came back hastily and somewhat angrily.
"Negative, Lion. We will maintain our tractor beam until we have confirmed your identity."
The rest of the bridge crew had been looking at Leo throughout the whole exchange, and he just rolled his eyes in amused befuddlement.
"Roger, Quester. Just don't allow anyone to get hurt over there when the circuits blow out."
"This is the Peace Quester. Out."
"Idiots," Leo heard Moon mutter.
"They are just trying to be careful," Leo said, realizing it was starting to sound like a broken record. Leo activated the intercom circuit.
"Abe, what are your instruments telling you about the Peace Quester?"
"Well, we know that this is a civilian class from the schematics the Outfitters plugged into our databanks. She can operate with a crew of 25, but has room for 500, which from what I can tell, they have about half that on board. Their basic design was a troop transport freighter, but they have modified it greatly. They started by adding all those extra weapons. In a fight, all she's going to be is a big weapons platform, with hardly any maneuver capability except some fundamental motion. Her shields are way overpowered, and she seems to have some fundamental energy control problems."
"Yoshi, your assessment," Leo shot.
The first mate spun his chair around and faced everyone else in the cockpit. "She might be able to hold us off if her gunners were good, but if we got a few torpedoes through and hit some key batteries, we could snipe at her until she gave up."
"Moon?"
"Her targeting scanners are good. She can reach out and touch us about double our range, but from what I can tell, she has no torpedo or missile tubes."
"Packer, Logan, what is your assessments?"
Packer responded first from his temporary station behind the bridge.
"Her landing bays would be able to handle a good amount of traffic, up to and including 3 or 4 recon ships. But they went overboard on the tractor beams and fire suppressant devices. From the scans I can do, they have very little repair facilities."
Logan jumped right in. "From what I can gather, the only ships they have are those small shuttlecrafts that keep zipping by, so they don't need that much repair space."
"Okay, gunners, do you guys have anything to add?"
"Flavius here, Captain. I think they got a slow leak of some sort of gas near their portside maneuvering thrusters. It just started about 3 minutes ago."
"Gutenberg, run a detailed scan over that area and give me a report."
"Cap, from what I can tell, they either don't have or haven't lowered their blast shields on an upper exterior port, because I can still see people looking at us," Holliday stated.
"Good observations. Anyone else?"
"Yeah, whoever did the plasma welds on the lower side of the ship near the airlock was sloppy," Fundikowski remarked.
"Verde, Gonzalez, do you guys have anything to add?"
"Yeah, they must be afraid of the dark, because they got some of the most potent running lights I've ever seen on the outside of a deep spacecraft," Verde responded.
"Yeah, Cap, I got something to report," Juan Gonzalez said.
"What's that?"
"All gunners, put down your blast shields. We are about to get a heck of a good light show." Leo had less than 10 seconds to put up the blast shields on the windows of the ship before the fireworks began. No sooner had the polarized shield dropped into place than the tractor beam that was holding them turned from pale blue to a very bright white light, which was bright as any flash bulb fired at less than 2 feet from the eyeball. The ship quaked slightly, and the tractor beam let go. Yoshi maintained his position. Holding position, Cap. Systems check, Larry. I had sufficient warning of the situation and was able to shield all the sensitive equipment in time. Good. Anyone else have anything to report? All lights signaled to Leo negative, and Leo looked at his own boards. No alarms were triggered from the energy just released at and around the lion. Leo, we got a call coming in from the Questor, Larry announced clearly. Arrogant Lion, Captain Grant speaking. Captain Grant, thank you for your patience. You may land your ship on the flight deck. Please land on the center row and remain inside your ship until you receive orders to disembark. Roger, Questor. Was anyone hurt during the overload of the tractor beam? Again, another long pause. I'm sorry, Captain Grant, but that information is classified. Leo heard various mutterings around him, but ignored them. I see, Leo said, rolling his eyes again. We shall be landing in... Yoshi raised his hand over the top of the seat with 3 fingers up. 3 minutes. Arrogant Lion out. Let's land this baby and meet some of our great-great to the many great powers, grand-nieces and nephews, Leo said excitedly over the intercom channel. The only sounds for the next few minutes were the sounds of the lion being readied for landing on an unfamiliar ship. Yoshi, with his typical perfection, landed the ship softly and smoothly on the deck within centimeters of the lighted marker on the floor. Captain Grant? Yes, sir, Admiral. Would you and your crew please get ready to join me in meeting the ambassador from Earth? The men are already ready, sir. They will be down on the lower deck in 2 minutes. Very good, Captain Grant. Thank you for the ride. The Arrogant Lion Diplomatic Escort Service is ready for all and every mission you need her for, sir. Your spectacular service has been noted. Admiral Bashir out. Leo unstrapped himself from the seat, followed the crew down to the lower deck, leaving Moon and Winchester on board for contingencies. Tuck your shirt in, Pablo, Sergeant Gonzalez ordered. Holiday, what the heck did you shine your boots with, a chocolate bar? Gonzalez was part mother, part drill sergeant with the Rangers, always correcting their appearance or their attitude. Funzikowski, when was the last time you shaved? This morning, Sergeant, the small man shouted, snapping to attention. Okay, guys, simmer down. Let's try and look professional for our brothers from Earth, Leo ordered, knowing that their noise down in the lower deck would get very loud if he let it continue. The Admiral came down the ladder, preceded by both his bald bodyguard and the huge African bodyguard. Across the Admiral's waist was a belt containing just a cavalry saber. Captain Grant, any word on when we can disembark? No, sir. Leo fiddled with the comm circuit and was not surprised by the results. They are running scanners over the exterior of the ship now. Then he pushed a few more buttons. They are 98% completed now. Leo punched a few more commands, then in a loud voice, Leo announced to the crew, "We have been given the go-ahead to disembark." The crew did a fast shuffle and rearranged themselves in the landing bay. Leo hit the ramp control button. They were met at the bottom of the ramp by a tall, wiry-looking gentleman who was dressed in a white uniform that looked to Leo like a U.S. Navy uniform with a very orderly-looking, long, stylish haircut. In contrast to the Admiral and Leo and his crew who were in their dressed black-on-black uniforms with gold trim. He introduced himself as Captain Jack Carey, military attaché to Ambassador Jefferson. The Admiral extended his hand, which was returned with a bit of a discomfort on the part of the Captain. The Captain then stated the Ambassador would meet them at the far end of the deck, and then they would proceed from there to a conference room for discussion. The Admiral introduced Leo to the Captain. Leo extended his hand. It was like holding a wet noodle. The Captain tried to make small talk, asking how the flight was and how far they had come. The Admiral, whom Leo had learned during the 3-week trip, was not much for small talk if he was not familiar with the person, responded with short, terse answers. Captain Carey looked more and more uncomfortable with each passing minute. Someone signaled for the Captain from a doorway, and the Captain motioned for them to cross the landing bay. Leo looked around at the bay they were in. It was a very bright, very clean, very sedate-looking area. not at all like the landing bays on the fleet ships, which were dark gray for operational purposes, and usually a scene of orchestrated chaos. As they crossed the open area between the lion and the apparent center of attention, Leo was a half a step behind the admiral and slightly to his rear, as was customary in military cultures. The two bodyguards, Rock and Green, were flanking the admiral, looking as menacing as always. Behind Leo was his crew, walking two by two, starting with Yoshida and Tsuratelli, and Sergeant Gonzalez was bringing up the rear with the admiral's personal droid, Franklin. The procession walked towards the large line of people, which had formed in one of the alcoves off the main hangar. They stopped two paces in front of a man that Leo guessed was the ambassador. A quick glance showed the man to be tall, about 6'3", Caucasian, with slightly graying dark brown hair, with two blue eyes and a total average-looking face. Not handsome, but not plain either. He was dressed in what Leo took for a suit, but with no lapels or collars. Charcoal gray in color, with a very clean white pullover shirt with a stunted turtleneck. Flanked on either side of the ambassador were numerous personnel, from some dressed like the ambassador, others dressed in the same manner as Captain Carey. All of them, Leo estimated, to be in their mid-20s to early 30s, each looking like they had just stepped off the pages of a fashion magazine with excellent coiffed hair, and if Leo was not mistaken, a few of the men were wearing makeup. "Welcome, Admiral, to the Peace Quester," the man said, gesturing with open arms. "I am so very glad to meet you after all this time of only having the briefest message from you that you sent to Earth. Let me introduce myself. I am Ambassador George William Jefferson Clinton." "The honor is mine, Ambassador. I am finally glad to meet a civilian authority from my home, and with that, I would like to present you with my sword." And matching words to actions, the admiral unfastened the sword from his belt, which symbolizes that I am now placing myself and my fleet under the authority and power of the unified civilian authority of Earth's government. The ambassador seemed taken aback by this, but took the sword from the admiral, admired it briefly, and quickly handed directly to Captain Carey, who Leo caught looking at it like it was some kind of snake. "I am greatly surprised by the trust and respect that you have given a government of which you know nothing about, but at the same time, I am honored that you would make such a gesture, and as a representative of the government, I will do my utmost to administer to the best interests of both your people and the people of Earth." The admiral nodded at this. "Now then, sir, why don't you and I retire to a more private area where we can deal with the details of this momentous occasion?" "Very good, Ambassador," the admiral replied. With that, the admiral made a large flourish with his arms and directed the admiral down a hallway. The admiral turned quickly to Leo and said quietly, "Captain, come with me. Release your men from the procession to do as they please." Leo turned to Yoshi and used a quick hand signal. The first mate nodded and passed the signal to the men. The men dropped back quickly, and Franklin approached Leo's side quietly. They proceeded down a hallway to a large set of double doors that opened quietly for the leaders in the procession. Leo followed along as best he could, but some of the members of the delegation who had been flanking the ambassador squeezed by Leo and Franklin. Leo was one of the last ones in the door. Finding a seat behind the admiral in a large circular room that was set up with a short round table in the middle, with only two overstuffed chairs around it, sitting in the middle of the table was a silver coffee pot with two matching sets of cups and saucers. The only difference in the seats was Ambassador Jefferson had a monitor next to his, and the admiral did not. Franklin stood directly behind the admiral, as he had been when Leo had first met him, while Green and Rock stood flanking their object of protection. The ambassador was not paying attention to this initially, but one female, who was continuously looking into what Leo surmised was a comm panel, did. This female then approached the ambassador and whispered something into his ear after Captain Carey finished whispering. The ambassador looked up quickly while she was talking and looked up at the admiral, who had his hands steepled in front of him, waiting patiently. "Admiral, may I ask a favor? Since this meeting is being recorded for historical records, my press secretary would like to ask you if your two bodyguards would sit down and your droid as well." The admiral looked around quickly, as if noticing for the first time Green, Rock, and Franklin, and he slightly nodded towards them. Rock and Green looked at each other quickly, then took seats behind the admiral, one to the left and one to the right. These seats had previously been occupied by members of the ambassador's entourage, who moved quickly when the two heavily armed men approached and stood over them.
Franklin found a vacant seat directly behind the Admiral and sat down stiffly. Leo had never seen a droid sit. Heck, even Winchester, whom Leo had spent close to 3 years with, always stood.
Thank you so much, Admiral. Now, let us get down to the heart of the matter. I would like to give you the details that the United Nations has proposed.
That would be most appreciated, sir.
We are initially going to request that you turn the fleet over to civilian authority, but since you have symbolically done that, we can move on to other matters. Might I add personally that the turning over the ultimate authority of the fleet to the duly elected government shows that you are a reasonable, fair, and highly intelligent man who brings credit to himself and his family.
Thank you very much. I am honored by your comments, sir.
As for you and your men, the United Nations is willing to give them all partial Earth citizenship, along with $100 a day for every day they spend with the fleet, for a period of no more than 5 years from this date.
Wait a minute. You came here to talk to me about money and voting rights? When the entire existence of the Earth is threatened?
Among other things, Admiral.
Among other things, the Admiral repeated, almost sputtering.
Yes, when one employs a mercenary, that is usually the first thing that comes up on the table, money.
Mercenaries? Is that what you think me and my men are?
The Admiral spouted, his neck starting to turn red.
Yes, why else would your people be defending a place that they have not seen in at least 100 years? The Ambassador stated calmly.
Leo noticed the Admiral take a meditative and calming breath, then he answered,
I understand your viewpoint, Ambassador Jefferson, but you do not know these men. They are from a different time in history than yourself, and I can understand your confusion. But let me assure you that the thought of money did not cross my mind in preparing to come to this table.
The Ambassador seemed perplexed now.
Then why are your people defending the Earth?
Leo watched the Admiral, who had again steepled his hands.
For a variety of reasons. Honor, love of their homes, adventure. Some because of their opinion they have no other choice. Some, like Captain Grant here, because he feels it necessary to protect his great-great-nieces and nephews.
Leo shifted slightly when the Ambassador's attention shifted to him.
As for myself, I do it because it is the right thing to do.
I see. So does that mean you do not want to discuss money for you and your people?
The Admiral breathed out noisily at this. If I say no to the offer at this point, my men could potentially go back to Earth in the future and be destitute. Although I highly doubt that, since they are all highly skilled individuals and very intelligent. And if I accept the money at this point, then I will look like you and the United Nations are right, and I am a mercenary.
Sir, that is not really an answer, the Ambassador stated calmly.
Then I guess I shall put the lesser of two evils and tell you that we do not want any compensation for our fight against the Horde.
I see. Well then, on to the next important point of the agenda. Since you have stated that you and your fleet willingly place yourselves under civilian authority, and I, being a duly recognized representative of the United Nations of Earth, I order you to communicate to your fleet an end to all offensive operations against the Alarian Empire and commit 100% of your forces to defending the Earth.
Chapter 42. So what do you think of the Peace Quester so far, Captain Grant?
Leo was caught mid-chew and hurriedly swallowed, used to it from his own ship.
It is a very nice ship, nice lines.
Well, the design was picked primarily because of its space, and the United Nations engineering team thought it would be most suited for the diplomatic mission.
Leo nodded, hoping to look thoughtful, as the female United Nations ranking diplomat present continued.
We were a little concerned about the decision to place the gun turrets, but once it was decided they would be for defensive purposes only, they were added.
Leo took another bite from what he guessed was quiche, meatless quiche, he noted.
So, Captain Grant, have you met any other races beside the Alarians?
Leo held up a finger and finished chewing.
Listen, stop calling me Captain Grant. Only the Admiral, my commanding officer, called me that. Call me Leo.
The female diplomat nodded silently and smiled while taking a sip of her water. The whole atmosphere around the table was like that. Polite conversation with small diplomatic nods and sounds of glasses clinking around the room.
The whole dinner had been preceded by a cocktail party, which to some of Leah's crew was a disappointment, due to the most potent thing being served was apple juice and carrot juice. The Admiral and the Ambassador were at a private dinner, and Leah was seated at the head of the table with the second-in-command of the Peace Quester and the Ambassador's own chief of staff.
Okay, Leo, so have you met any other races?
I don't know what you mean by that. I haven't really had dealings with too many other than talking to them over comm channels and occasionally at some bars on the Illyrian frontier. I have talked to some other ship crews, but I haven't really met any other military or governmental representatives except for the Illyrians.
I see, and have you been in any of the offensive actions the Admiral initiated against the Illyrian Federation?
The second-in-command, Lieutenant Colonel Layette, sitting on Leo's left, asked.
The question was dripping with contempt, but Leo let it slide.
As a matter of fact, I have been in some offensive operations against the Illyrians.
You mean the Illyrian Federation of Star Systems, the officer corrected.
Whatever, Leo said, smiling back and taking another bite.
Did you feel all right with that? I mean, no formal declaration of war has been announced between our two governments. Didn't you feel that it was a bit barbaric?
The last bit was said with a slightly louder voice, and some of the conversations close by faltered slightly.
Leo looked back at the man coldly, then regained his composure.
Well, if you do recall, we did offer the olive branch of peace first, and it was to a member of the Illyrian Senate. What we received in kind was one of our senior officers back with no left leg, and no possibility for one to be reattached due to some sort of poison they infected him with. So in answer to your question, no, I don't feel any of our attacks were barbaric or unwarranted.
Some of the conversation close by involving Yoshida and Fia had stopped momentarily as Leo presented his case. Now they waited for what the Earth officer would say in return.
I see, so you have no remorse or regret for attacking a peaceful people unprovoked?
The man said back with what Leo could tell was outrage at Leo's ideas.
Leo leaned on the table with an elbow and took a sip of water, then continued.
Peaceful, sir? Well, you obviously do not understand the situation out here, and obviously have not acquainted yourself with the strategy that we have been following. We have only been attacking military targets, resources that can and will someday be directed at the enslavement of Earth and her people.
Captain Grant, how can you be so sure that the Illyrians will attack Earth, let alone try to enslave it?
Leo took a long, deep breath and let it out slowly so he would not feel so much like punching the arrogant jerk in the nose.
1,000 years of the Illyrians' own history.
So you believe that history predicts how people will act in the present?
Well, look at Earth and my people. There have not been a major war on Earth in the last 103 years. That proves races can change.
Well, the only reason there hasn't been a war on Earth was because of the massive interlocking of Earth economies and the blurring of international lines due to mega corporations like Daewoo, IBM, Lloyd's, Patroka. You see, war would not be profitable for them, so they do not allow it to occur.
The whole room had grown quiet as they listened to Leo respond to the other man's questions. His men in particular were unsure what to do. Normally back in the fleet, somebody would have thrown a punch long before this, and there would have been a good brawl, and then the two opposing sides would have sat down and drank together after getting their wounds tended by the closest auto dock.
I see. Well, Captain Grant, I put it to you that mankind has changed since you and your men were taken away. The Earth has become more civilized. We have abolished capital punishment, ended starvation, eliminated birth defects, ensured that everyone has a good education, and dedicated a large portion of the world economy to the arts.
Leo knew all this from the history he had been studying for the last several weeks in preparation for this meeting, but he also knew some other things.
Yes, but in the process you have eliminated or curtailed a lot of freedoms, such as freedom to travel without government restrictions, the freedom to marry whomever you want without having to worry about government restrictions of genetics, and most importantly, limited the free press and discouraged free speech. He said this while sliding his chair away from the man and facing him.
The room had turned utterly still at Leo's words, and the man next to Leo was starting to begin to look uncomfortable, but he took a breath and fired back at him.
A small price to pay for every child in the world to go to bed with a full stomach and every man and woman to be employed if they so desire.
I will admit these are nice things, and I am glad they have been achieved, but to trade those for my freedom, well, I shall use the words of one of my fellow countrymen, Patrick Henry, said 200 years before I was born. Give me liberty or give me death. The man folded his napkins and placed it on the table and muttered under his breath, "Uneducated savage." Leo put down his glass of water and looked around, Commander Layette towards Yoshida, who was staring at Leo, wondering what his boss was going to do next. "Uneducated and savage. Well, sir, that may be true, but let us not forget, you need people like me and my crew to protect people like you from what will be arriving in Earth in about 2 years unless we stop them." "I really don't think so, Captain Grant. After the ambassador brokers the peace with the Alarian Federation, then you and your people would be as useless as the internal combustion engine." Leo knew this was a highly insulting thing in the man's world. The internal combustion engine had been a polluter, a destroyer, and had been outlawed over 50 years ago, but he knew he had to keep his calm, so he rose up and neatly placed his napkin on the table. He nodded silently to the female diplomat on his right, then nodded to the commander, pushed his chair in, made his way towards the door. Without being told, the crew fell in step behind him. As the door started to open, Leo heard the commander state loudly enough for him to hear, "Barbarians." Leo made his way back to the ship and sat down on the ramp. The crew gathered around him and unbuttoned their dress jackets and draped them over their arms, slung them across their shoulders. Pablo went up the ramp and quickly came back with beer for those who drank and a Coca-Cola for Gonzalez. "Bunch of pansies," Fia stated, drinking his beer. "You think the Admiral's going to be mad?" Yoshida asked. Leo took a swig of his own. "Maybe, hard to say. Don't think he likes the way things are going. And I'm pretty sure us getting up and walking out of a diplomatic dinner will not improve his poor mood." There were a few murmurs among the guys now. Some of them were sitting on the floor, others were leaning against the landing gear. "But on the other hand, we didn't start a fight, which I would have loved to do." The murmuring grew more heated now, and Leo just let it all go as he laid back down on the ramp and stared up at the ship. "Cap, we got company," Holiday's voice stated. Leo sat up quickly and looked to where his best gunner was pointing. Following his finger, Leo sighted in a far arc of almost to the end of the bay. Standing there was a group Leo had never seen before on board the Peace Quester, and they didn't fit in with the two groups they had seen. "Soldiers," Yoshi said quietly. "They gotta be. Haven't seen anybody else like them on board," Leo said, standing now. The crew was looking at was a set of 3 men and 1 woman, all dressed in black and gray camouflage uniforms with short sleeves that would blend in perfectly in the urban environment. They were also standing in a rough triangular formation, with an average-sized gray-haired man at the point. The group was definitely different from anyone else they had seen on board. Every one of them was muscular, and each of them, including the woman, wore their hair extremely short, and all of them had a very serious look on their face. After staring back at them for a few minutes, Leo had an idea. "Finucci, go up the ramp, grab 4 beers. Leo could hear the short Greek doing what was asked, and in a few minutes he was standing beside Leo again. Without looking away from the group, he said, "Take these over to our new friends." The small man started out, and as he crossed the distance, Yoshi spoke up. "How do you know they're going to be friends?" "Well, since they aren't included in the greeting ceremony, and they weren't invited to dinner, that means the diplomats and the Navy probably don't like them." "Oh, I see," Yoshi stated. "The old Middle Eastern saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend." Chapter 43. So what happened then? "Well, we fired up the engine and got the hell out of Dodge." Hearty laugh from the man and a slap on the back. "That's great, just what I would have done in your shoes, Leonardo. Now then, on to something very important. Can we get any more beer? We seem to be running low." Leo looked around the room and sighted Felix. The droid was still carrying the semi-transparent keg of beer, but it was half empty, and it had only been tapped 20 minutes ago. Leo burped loudly. "Okay, give me a minute." Flipping on his comm unit, Leo signaled back to the ship. "Winchester, Winchester, where are you?" "Yes, sir, I am here. No need to shout. I can hear you just fine." "Of course you can. Now then, I need another keg of beer down here on the double." "Yes, sir, but don't you think you and the crew's had enough? I mean, you already drank 3 kegs already." "It's not just for me. It's our 50 newest best friends from the United Nations Ranger Company. Its commander, William C. McKnight." Hearing his name, the colonel turned around and saluted Leo with a half-empty beer mug. "Leo?" "Yes, Winchester." I've been communicating with the Peace Quester's computer, and I've come upon some of their regulations concerning the Ranger Company, and one of them is they are not allowed to consume alcoholic beverages.
Oh, I see. Just a minute. Leaving the comm channel open, Leah reached over and tapped Colonel McKnight on his shoulder. The colonel twirled around and spilled some of his beer in the process.
Yes, the inebriated man said.
My main droid tells me there's some regulation against you and your people not consuming alcoholic beverages.
Why, yes, I do recall reading that somewhere, the colonel responded.
Leah reached over and punched the man on the shoulder.
Then why are you and your men drinking our beer?
And he hit him again in the shoulder.
The colonel slapped a hand to his face with the mouth wide open and held his mug aloft, squinting at it.
You mean, this has alcohol in it?
Yes, it does. It's a special concoction from my engineer. It is 20 proof.
Really? The colonel said in a mock shock again. I could not detect any alcohol in it at all.
Now Leo acted shocked. You have got to be kidding me.
Well, now that you mention it, I kind of thought that our group company were acting strangely, not having any alcohol.
Do you have an example of the behavior you consider strange? Leo asked, totally enjoying the game now.
Well, the dancing on the tables, my people have never done that before. And we have been on the ship for 4 months now.
Oh, I see. Anything else?
Well, normally Captain Katrana is very sedate and reserved. I've never seen her sing a duet with anyone, let alone your pilot Packer. And I don't even think she knew who Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton were before tonight.
I see. Well, this behavior is pretty typical of my guys when they've been drinking, except maybe the one thing.
What's that?
They usually end up getting into a fight.
How about that low occurrence between your chief and my heavy weapons sergeant?
Heck, that was just a test of strength, and they only threw 6 or 7 punches each before they got thirsty again.
Yeah, I guess that doesn't count for a fight, the colonel responded.
Leo heard a beep in his ear and remembered that he had the comm channel open to Winchester.
Did you hear that? The colonel didn't know there was alcohol in the beer.
Sir, I don't think that ignorance will be a valid defense in this case.
Well, if anyone asked, we'll just say they were being polite and acted like good hosts. Enough of this talk. I hear a song I want to dance to, Winchester. Talk to you later, and get that next keg of beer down here on the double.
Leo barely heard the droid say, "Okay, Leo," before he turned the channel off.
Chapter 44. You missed a spot, Captain Grant.
Leo looked back over the area he had just cleaned and didn't see anything wrong.
Just kidding, the Admiral stated with a chuckle. Leo turned off the laser sweeper and wiped his brow with his sleeve. The Admiral held up a bottle of water, and Leo nodded. A second later, the bottle arched across the 20 feet separating them, and Leo caught it in his left hand. Popping the top, he sucked down half the bottle in one swig.
Thanks, sir.
Do not, Captain. Now then, as I see it, you have about 6 more hours to work off your punishment, which should give you enough time to finish cleaning this deck, the Admiral said, sitting down on the nearby crate. Leo looked across the bay of the Peace Quester. He had been at it for 2 hours today and 3 hours yesterday.
Yes, sir, that is what I figure, too.
How are the men doing? As he motioned for Leo to sit, which Leo did on top of the support unit for the laser cleaner.
Good. Some of the guys have been doing tougher work than me, and I think Fia and Flavius worked off their hours already by reprogramming the replicator system for the last 24 hours.
Yeah, I know. I signed off on their chits at 7 this morning, after having an excellent cup of coffee with the ambassador.
Leo raised his eyebrows as he fiddled the top of the water bottle.
Yes, the ambassador is talking to me again. No thanks to you, Captain.
The last part was said with some anger.
He was outraged and wanted you and your crew locked up and thrown in his brig until his ship got back to Earth, but luckily for you, I was able to convince him you were more valuable out here on the front lines.
Sorry, sir, Leo answered quietly.
That is quite all right. I read a transcript of your conversation with Commander Liette at the dinner table. I wish I had heard them myself. The stuff you said needed to be said. As for the alcohol, well, you know I don't drink, but I do have nothing against the stuff. And I realize that you and your crew were just being the soldiers that you are. But getting into a fight with the diplomatic corps when they tried to bust up your party with Colonel McKnight's people, well, that is just unacceptable.
Yes, sir,
but the diplomats were the ones that waded into the ready room with the stunners fully charged and their fingers on the trigger. For good reasons. Those soldiers are trained almost as well as you and your crew in close quarters combat, and their smallest ranger outweighs the heaviest diplomat by at least 20 pounds. You know, sir, that the Navy outnumbered us, Leo included the rangers this time without mentioning it, by at least 2-1. That is because 3/4 of Colonel McKnight's rangers and your crew were either passed out or had wandered off to develop deeper amorous relations in private. And again, that is no excuse. You put 30 of the diplomats in the sick bay and the rest into hiding because they thought you maniacs were going to hunt them down, shave their heads, and perform weird sexual acts on them, the Admiral said, smiling now. Leo shrugged his shoulders. You know that part was a bluff. The shaving of the heads or the perverse carnal acts? The Admiral held up his hand before Leo could answer. Never mind, don't answer. I don't want to know which part was a bluff. Leo smiled and kept his mouth shut, realizing the Admiral was releasing some tension. Now I know that the other side started it, and the regulations against drinking was something you had no idea about, at least not at first. Colonel McKnight said that in your defense. But Captain, you have got to sometimes lay down and take it for the greater good, and in this case, the peace. Leo realized the Admiral was saying something else here as well. That is something I am learning, too. The Ambassador is still going through with this foolish plan of contacting the Alarian Empire for a peace treaty. I have the feeling that the Ambassador is not familiar with Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain of Great Britain in the 1930s, who, after meeting with Adolf Hitler, said, "We have achieved peace in our time." Right after that, Hitler launched a major invasion of Eastern Europe. Your knowledge impresses me, Captain. Only in this case, the Ambassador will bring the attention of the whole Alarian Empire towards Earth. Any chance that the United Nations might change their minds and give the Ambassador different orders? The Admiral nodded thoughtfully. It is a possibility. From what I understand, the vote of the United Nations Security Council was very close. The other side of the opinion was that we should build up Earth's defenses and basically hope the threat never came, but I believe they need to be educated more. So basically, the longer we keep the Ambassador from meeting with the Alarians, the greater the time Earth has to build up their defenses. The Admiral smiled quickly, then returned to his original line of thought. By the way, the Ambassador and myself are going to make a joint address to the ship, the fleet, and the Earth tonight, at 2000 hours. I would like you and your men to watch it in the main dining area at that time. Yes, sir, we will be there. What is the uniform, sir? Duty uniform, but leave a majority of your personal weapons on the ship. No need to make the diplomats or the Navy personnel more nervous than they already are. Yes, sir. The Admiral got up and brushed off his pants. Leo stood up as well. Get back to work, Captain. I'm not going to sign off on your chit until this floor is done. Yes, sir. Leo shouted as he thumbed the switch on the laser cleaner. Chapter 45. Brothers and sisters from and on Earth, as some of you may know, my name is Jared Bashir, formerly of the Indian Ocean Forces in the year 2050. As you know, the entire fleet, 26,980 personnel, was snatched from Earth's history from the years 5000 BC to 2050 AD, from all corners, conditions, and situations to be found on Earth. We still do not know who the Outfitters are, but we do know that there is an alien race called the Alarians, whose past history has been one of conquest and subjugation. We desire nothing but peace and free trade between our people and our neighbors in the galaxy. To this end, Ambassador Jefferson will be heading a delegation on the ship the Peace Quester to the Alarian Emperor. During this time, the fleet will maintain a purely defensive position. We pray that the Alarians will meet us in good faith and with open minds in order that a dialogue will be opened. We patiently wait for the first ships from Earth to join us here and bolster our defenses should that become necessary. I'd like to state to the people of Earth that the Alarians, in my opinion, will not seek peace. They do not want peace. They will not let us live in peace. They will attack us and they will attempt to enslave us. I ask you to consider this in your future deliberations. As for me and my brothers and sisters of the fleet, we stand here ready to defend our home and yours with every tool and weapon at our disposal. For my deep space brothers and sisters of the fleet, I ask you to stand firm in your resolve to keep up the great labors you have done so far and continue to pray for peace while preparing for war. God bless you all. Now I'd like to turn over the podium to Ambassador George William Clinton Jefferson, who has arrived out here on a mission of peace. Ambassador? The view of the screen shifted to the ambassador, who was sitting across the low table from the admiral. Leo recognized it now as the same room as the one in which they had their initial meeting. As the admiral stated, we seek peace. We found peace on Earth after much struggle and many senseless wars. We offer an olive branch to the Illyrians. I believe, even though the Illyrians' history has been one of bloodshed and violence, that deep in their souls they wish for peace as well. We will offer them favored trading status, opportunities for cultural exchange, and a chance for them to learn about us and our quest for peace. Leo rolled his eyes as the man continued. The Admiral has placed the Stranger Fleet under the authority of the United Nations. As previously decided by the Security Council, the fleet has been moved to a strictly defensive position. This will put an end to some minor raids that the Admiral had authorized on his own accord. We do seek peace, and the United Nations is sorry it did not move swiftly to give the Admiral more direction before his orders were carried out. Ouch, that hurt, Leo thought. He basically called the Admiral a child who was out here running amok. We will offer the Illyrians reparations if they press the issues, but since the attacks were so sporadic and few, perhaps the issue will not come up. We expect to present our petition for an audience with the Emperor in approximately 3 months. Between now and that time, we will be traveling slowly into Illyrian territory, making ourselves known and spreading the supplication of peace to all representatives of the Illyrian government. Thank you for your patience, and I will report to you on each significant occasion. Thank you. The screen on the wall went blank, and Leo turned, watched the people in the room. Most were diplomats wearing their strange suits. The rest of the room was filled up with Navy personnel in their sissy white uniforms. Leo's own men were sitting along the bar and few tables. None of the Rangers from Earth were in the room, as they were still restricted to their bays in the lower bowels of the ship. Leo's men were subdued, whispering among themselves, while the diplomats and the rest were talking in normal tones. Leo was standing off by himself, having just ordered an apple juice from the server. Leo reached into his jacket and pulled out a silver flask and poured a good-sized shot into the glass. Swirling the glass to mix it, Leo was about to take a gulp when someone tapped him on the shoulder. Leo turned slowly. Yes? Captain Grant? Leo turned to find himself facing a scarecrow in a white crewman's outfit with the rank of Technician 6, Social Services Branch. That's me, Leo quickly revised his estimate. Not a scarecrow, but a very thin man with owlish looks. Captain Grant, I'm Dr. Michael Methven, Professor of History and Social Services at the London University, the man said quickly, but very clearly. Leo reached out his hand unconsciously and saw the man wince as Leo shook the man's hand. Glad to meet you, sir. Yes, I was wondering if I could ask you and your crew some questions. Leo looked over the man quickly, then took a sip of his now spiked apple juice. What kind of questions, Dr. Methven? Well, as I said, I am a professor of history, and I would like to interview you and your crew for some first-hand aspects of their homes before the outfitters took them away. Leo sipped his drink, liking the warmth it was providing, and nodded for the man to continue. I think it would be a considerable opportunity for learning, and to possibly set some historical chronicles straight, the man said excitedly. To actually talk to a person from the ancient Roman Empire, what we could learn. Whoa, slow down, Professor. First things first, how come you are talking to me? Why not my men? Secondly, why are you talking to me at all? I thought me and my men were basically persona non grata to you folks. Thirdly, me and my men are not exhibits or walking historical monuments. Don't forget, the outfitters picked us because we didn't have an impact on history, so there might not be too much we could tell you. The lean professor nodded at each of Leo's questions and fidgeted slightly. Very good questions, Captain. I can tell you have a very well-trained mind. The man pulled absently at his collar. I assume since yours was a military organization, you had say over your men's dealings. Leo laughed. Well, Professor, my rules are that if it doesn't interfere with them doing their job, I really don't care what they do. Oh, I see. How very enlightened of you. The doctor pulled out a comm panel and made a notation. Insomuch as you and your collection of eclectic personnel being persona non gratis to the consular representatives, I'm not technically a diplomat, and my professional interest has overridden any social mores stipulated by this cultural microsystem. Leo nodded, trying to decipher the complete sentence. I wholly understand your anxiety for your men, and I realize the magnitude of your duties nevertheless. I do believe they, and you for that matter, do have some insights into history that myself and my colleagues cannot learn from tomes, obelisks, and archaeological sites. Leo mulled this over as he sipped his drink and looked over the man. Okay, Professor, I will introduce you to my men, but if they don't want to talk to you, that is it. Don't bother them any more. But I'm sure they will let you know if you are pestering them. Excellent, sir. When might the introductions be completed? The man said, actually clapping his hands together, dropping his comm panel in the process. A few heads turned to see what the commotion was, and Leo quickly stooped over to recover the panel. Thank you, Captain, the man said, taking back the offered comm panel. No problem, but I do have one condition before you talk to me. I want to ask you some questions. Oh? The lanky fellow asked, raising his eyebrows. Chapter 46. You've got to be kidding. Nope, that's what the man said, Leo answered, pulling a t-shirt over his head. Whew, that is strange. Did you ask him what took its place? Of course I did. He said it was a combination of Buddhism and Confucianism. So what is the status of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam? Well, according to the worldwide census of 2150, less than 1% of the population identified themselves as belonging to one of these groups, while the rest of the population professed some belief in Eastern Asian philosophy, Leo answered, tucking in his t-shirt. Yoshida arranged his feet on the table and picked his teeth with a toothpick. So Christianity is still legal? Sure is, just not widely known or considered. Oh, well, do these people know that the majority of the fleet is either Christian, Muslim, or Jewish? Well, they soon will. I told the professor to join us after services for brunch. I have invited him to the services if he is interested, which he was. I bet he was. Has he ever been to a Christian service before? Not that I know of, and I'm sure he's never been to one like ours. Yoshida looked at his watch. Hey, we better get moving, or Gonzalez is going to chastise us publicly. Leo finished buttoning up his shirt. Again. Chapter 47. That was very interesting, Captain, Dr. Methven announced as he sat down next to Leo at the table. So how did you like the sermon? Leo asked, dabbing at some of his ham and cheese omelet. Very interesting. And am I correct in assuming that all of those thoughts and the main theme of the speech came from the Christian Bible? Yeah, they did. Sergeant Gonzalez adhered strictly to the Bible, not being any sort of ordained minister. He feels it is best to stick as close to the word as possible. That is fascinating. I have never read the book myself. I shall have to study it in some detail. Some of the ideas were revolutionary, especially the part about the perfection of God and the imperfection of man, and the reconciler being the man named Jesus, who claimed to be the Son of God. Leo just nodded. For a man that had never been to a Christian service before, he had picked up the main points rather quickly. What is this we are eating, Captain? I cannot quite place the darker matter in the eggs. Oh, that is sausage, Leo replied after finishing his own mouthful. The man stopped chewing immediately, and then grabbed his napkin, politely emptied the contents of his mouth into it. You mean meat? The man said, paling noticeably. Yes, from our replicators, though Fia's own recipe, Yoshida, who was sitting nearby, stated. Oh my goodness, I thought it was soy, the doctor said, now turning a paler shade of white, if that was possible. No way, soy, you just don't get the same good protein, Fia said, standing up and clapping the man on the back. Something wrong, Doc? The professor was sweating profusely and wiping his brow. No, except all my life I've been a strict vegetarian and never eaten anything with a face. Logan, who had been sitting quietly most of the exchange, piped in now. Professor, you got a lot to learn about replicator food. Chapter 48. Leo watched the Peace Quester get smaller and smaller in the rear display as the line sped towards its hyperspace jump point. Leo reflected on the last 2 weeks. So much had changed. All offensive operations had been halted against the Horde. The fleet was now under the civilian authority of the Earth, but with the Admiral still in command. Not to mention what he had learned about Earth. Talking in length and a great deal with Professor Methven had cemented what Leo already knew to be true. The Earth was not the same place Leo had been taken from, and that'd probably never be the same again. And Leo was very confused about the whole universe, most particularly how he fit into it. A few things he knew for sure. He was part of his crew. The Lion was his ship. Faith was his girl. And he trusted the fleet, and the fleet depended on the Lion. Chapter 49. Cap, message coming in from the Endurance, Gonzalez stated. Leo reached over to the button on the desk and depressed it. Markings? Marked for wide dispersion to all recon ships, priority 3A, the Lion's foremost gunner replied. I'll read it in a minute. Put it through to me down here, Leo ordered, and started to put a bookmark on his screen at the last paragraph he had read of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Pulling the new message up, Leo glanced through it quickly and let out a low whistle. Something going on? Yoshi asked, stepping out of the shower stall and reaching for his pants. Leo's eyes never left the screen. I'll say, the Peace Quester is leaving in 2 days for Alar to request a peace conference with the Emperor. Yoshi quickly pulled up his pants and slipped on a t-shirt. The only surprise there is that it took so long for it to happen. You know it. Yeah, I know it. The Quester had been with the fleet now 4 months, and the way the Ambassador Jefferson was talking, he didn't want to sit an extra day. So why the surprise? Yoshi asked, lacing up his boots. Well, it says here the announcement that the only ship going is the Peace Quester. No escorts? Yoshi asked, stopping what he was doing and looking up. Not a one. Wait a minute, here is something, Leo said, scrolling down the screen. In my opinion, taking any other ships will be unnecessary and seen as an act of aggression towards the Alarian government. Leo drummed his fingers on the desktop. Those are the words of Ambassador Jefferson. Keeping up that rhetoric, eh? Yoshida responded, starting to get his equipment belt on. You bet. Couldn't change his line now, no matter how much the Admiral has tried to change his mind. And no matter what he has seen, he must continue with his foolish plan, Leo said, and sighed afterwards. Yoshida finished getting dressed and walked towards the door. I'm going to report your discouraging remarks to the civilian authorities, Captain Grant, he said in a mocking, serious tone. I wish you would. Maybe I could get relieved of command, then I could go back to Earth and open a hamburger stand, Leo said, smiling. Never happened, Yoshida answered. Don't think they'd relieve me and give you command, eh? No, they'd probably do that. You just couldn't go back and open a hamburger stand. No one would loan you money, you butcher. Damn, you're right. Well, I guess I'll have to stay here and boss you around. Oh, and your shift started 10 minutes ago. Yes, sir, Master Cartwright. Hop thing be good, and me, chop chop, go polish silver. Leo almost fell over out of his chair laughing at the caricature. Chapter 50. Patrol pattern Alpha 1 completed, Verde stated. Roger, call it in and commence patrol pattern Beta 6, Leo replied without looking up from his panel. The whole patrolling pattern being so routine now that Leo could give the commands in his sleep and probably had a few times. Leo heard the proper sequence of buttons being pushed, then heard Verde give his code number and the corresponding code word of the day for the completion of an Alpha 1 patrol pattern. Leo was almost fully concentrated on his book he was reading when he heard an unaccustomed reply to the message. Roger, then a short burst from patrol command. Discontinue current status and report to home ship forthwith. Leo sat straight up when he heard this. Verde, whose finger was already on the button, responded. Roger, Alpha, Golf, Romeo, 4-3-5, out. Verde was looking over at Leo, who hurriedly laced up his high-top speakers he wore on duty. You want me to get everyone up? Leo looked at the chronometer, then at the current position, trying to gauge how long it would take to get back to the Endurance. Then he shook his head. No, just wake up everyone on third shift at their normal time. Let second shift sleep. They only got off an hour ago. Start making calculations, get ready for a jump in 20 minutes. Leo slid into the co-pilot seat and began to get the ship ready. Larry, can you be ready in that time?
I can be ready in half that time if you want, sir.
20 minutes will be fine, Larry, Leo smiled. Verde, start a level 1 pilot diagnostic as soon as we hit hyperspace. I'll do the co-pilot seat, and if you finish with that, before Sparky gets up, start doing a level 1 on the combo position.
Got it, Captain, Verde replied back.
Leo called Logan and Holiday, who were in the rear of the ship, and told them to start diagnostics on the ball turrets.
Chapter 51.
Good morning, Captains. The lanky figure of Captain De Clooney spoke as he climbed the small podium to his customary teaching position behind the lectern. A few voices around the room murmured good morning. Leo kept quiet and just sipped on the bottle of orange juice he had brought along.
I see that you are ready to all volunteer for whatever assignment I decide to give you, De Clooney smiled at his own inside joke.
Leo barely raised his eyes. He was beat. 20 hours ago, after being one of the first to arrive on the deck of the Endurance, he and his crew had spent every minute of it doing almost item-by-item scan of the equipment, instruments, and mechanisms on board. Any item that did not meet at least 90% efficiency is replaced with a new one, either on board the Lion or from one of the stores of the Endurance. This had been non-stop activity, and then when the Lion was done 2 hours ago, the crew, including Leo, had been reassigned to assist Faith Sex with doing the same on the 13 other recon ships in the squadron. Even now, his crew and all the others had converged on the last two ships to come in, the Black Cat and the Iron Tay, in order to complete the task as soon as possible.
Okay, I can see a lot of you are not all enthusiastic right now, but I think you will be after I tell you what our job is, De Clooney stated, smiling broadly. As you all know, the Peace Quester has left for a high-level diplomatic mission with the Alarians. You also know that no offensive operations are authorized at this time, but...
Now De Clooney had that gleam in his eye, that gleam that came when he talked about duty and honor.
That does not restrict us from conducting intelligence-gathering missions.
Leo's head shot up, as did the other recon ship commanders.
I thought that would gain your attention. Now then, the Admiral would like you all to conduct as deep reconnaissance as you think is prudent, and come back and report your findings.
There was a murmur around the room, and Leo joined in with a low whistle and activated his comm panel, knowing that De Clooney would soon give them the opportunity to download some files giving exact details for what information the Admiral wanted gathered.
Quiet, people, De Clooney stated and tapped the podium several times with his swagger stick. You'll all be given a specific zone to conduct intelligence-gathering activities, and we have to do some further modifications on your ships.
Chapter 52, 21 May, 2152. Leo watched the display with a great deal of interest. Lost amid the 50 other ships shown on the display was the Iron Tay. It was only luck that had been seen, and it was primarily due to Larry's vigilance and Gutenberg's filtering system. It was pure chance that both ships were here at the same time, even though their recon zones overlapped by only one system. But this system with 5 inhabitable planets was one of the few free trading zones in the Alarian Empire, and thus the traffic here was immense. So like a moth to the flame, both the Lion and the Iron Tay had been drawn here.
Sparky, which one is the Tay? Leo asked, knowing that Gutenberg would tell him as soon as he discovered it.
Contact number 49 of 52, Gutenberg stated, using the numbering system that marked the contacts as they appeared.
Leo punched in a command, and one of the displays changed to an overview of the positions of the contacts, keeping the Tay contact 49 in the center.
Leo toggled the switch to PA mode. Okay, everyone, we got a friend out there, if we need him. But like I've been saying, keep everything cool, and we won't need any help.
Don't start no trouble, there won't be no trouble, eh, Captain?
Something like that, Packer, Leo shot back to his head fighter pilot.
Same course as before. We are headed towards the Tobacan to sell off a load of helix crystals.
Any chance we can stop off at a bar and get a beer or two? Moon asked, turning slightly in his chair and smiling.
We'll see. Our Alarian-issued logbook looks good, and our cover is simple enough. The exterior modifications make us look like any other run-of-the-mill freighter, and if the attitude of the local government is okay, we'll see if we can find a bar close to the docks.
Yahoo! All right, Cap. Lock up your daughters and hide your liquor.
Leo let the guys go on for a minute, then quieted the circuit with a loud whistle. I don't know what you guys are happy about. We are on an intelligence gathering mission, and I want some good reports the morning after. And everyone can drink, but no one, and I mean no one, gets intoxicated. And if you do, both you and your partner will be on bread and water for a week. A chorus of now subdued eyes came back over Leo's comlink. Good. Now then, Yoshi, have we been contacted by the port controller yet? Chapter 53. That is interesting. What, you find something? Yeah, kinda. Well, what is it? Leo asked, frustrated with the first mate, who had talent for understatement. Well, typically on Alarian informational bulletin boards, all information is current and dealing with the future business or recent military incidents, Yoshida answered. Yeah, so? Leo said, not impressed. Well, here is an article describing the glories of a slaughter of a negotiation team from a Lagley's rebellious front. The Lagley's had a rebellion? Leo said, surprised. Yeah, about 200 years ago. Wow, that is something. Yeah, but that's not what I thought was interesting, Yoshida said with a disturbed look on his face. You mean the fact that the underclass of the society rose up for once and tried to throw over the caste system isn't interesting? Leo asked. Well, no, that is interesting in itself, and it is certainly an anomaly for the socio-economic system that is the Alarian culture and social fabric. But usually, in Alarian society, tales of glory are reserved for oral storytelling and are written down only in family history books. What do you mean, usually? Leo asked, trying to figure out what was going on with his pilot's head. The only time it is kept in official Alarian records is when the Alarian Imperial fleet is used. So that's your answer. The Alarian fleet put down the insurrection. That's just it. They didn't. The Alarian fleet, wasn't even activated for this. It was an internal clan flotilla. Leo reacted. So what I can't figure out is why this article, or recounting of the slaughter, is out there on the board. I don't know either, but share it with Verde. When he comes back on board, he has a good grasp of Alarian history, Leo suggested. Okay, but something here is not right, Yoshida said, concentrating on his screen again. Leo, wake up! What, everything okay? Leo said, sitting up in his bunk. Yeah, everything is okay. The guys are reporting in as scheduled, and in fact, they're all on their way back here now. Why? What is going on? Leo asked, reaching for his vest. I figured out why the recounting of the massacre was on the board. Leo laid back down to try and keep himself from strangling his roommate. What does this have to do with waking me up? And Leo looked at the chronometer on the underside of the bunk bed. In the middle of my 4 hours of sleep. The planet the massacre occurred on is the same one the Peace Quester is going to. So what? The Peace Conference has to happen somewhere, Leo said, starting to come fully awake. Don't you get it, Leo? The article was a warning to all Alarians to stay away from the conference site, because there's going to be a massacre. You seriously believe this? Leo asked, thinking it was pretty thin. Yeah, I do, Yoshida stated. This is unbelievably thin. I know, but it does make sense, Yoshi stated. Alarian history shows that the peace gestures by non-Alarian races have always been sent back to their people with warnings, usually after a show of force, Leo said, rubbing his eyes. Well, maybe Ambassador Jefferson insulted the Alarians in some way. Leo nodded. The slightest thing could upset the Alarians. Leo looked over his first mate. The man had saved Leo's life a couple of times with his wild leaps of intuition. And now he had a very serious look on his face, as if he believed it with every ounce of his being. Leo hit the intercom switch. All hands, prepare for immediate takeoff as soon as everyone is back on board. Sparky, send out a recall order to all the teams still out. Chief and Larry, run a test on the explosive bolts holding the exterior visual modifications. I want to be able to jettison those things as soon as we get out of the sensor and scanner range of this system. Chapter 54. How long till we reach the system the conference is in? 5 days to the Picardo system. Leo got up from his chair and tapped Gutenberg on the shoulder and motioned for the Hebrew man to follow him when he looked up. Leo walked back to the replicators on the command deck and got a granola bar and a banana.
Then he sat down on the stool. Gutenberg did likewise. Sparky, we need to send a message to everyone in the fleet, including the Peace Quester. But Cap, we are ordered to keep a complete communications blackout until we get back to Line Wolf. I know, and normally I wouldn't break an order like this, but if we don't, the Peace Quester doesn't have a clue. They are walking into a trap. Gutenberg just nodded. I want this message to be so heavily encrypted and compressed that only one of our positronic brains could read it. Plus, I want it short, not more than a sentence, and I want it to have such a vague reference that no one but a human being who studied Earth history could figure out what we were telling them. Got it. How long do I have to work on it? You have 3 hours, but everything is at your disposal. Larry, Winchester, who else you want to help? I'll take Verdi for the message and Logan for the encryption. You got him. Oh, and make this absolutely 360 distribution, as powerful as you can get the signal. If the Quester doesn't get it, I want someone else in the fleet too. Maybe someone closer to them than us. Got it, Cap. Anything else? No. Now get cracking. Leo watched his communications officer move to the workstation and start calling his team together. Chapter 55. This is the craziest thing I ever heard of. You got a better idea, Chief? Leo said, turning around to his engineer. No, but if this thing doesn't blow out half the circuits in the ship, then it's going to light up every Alarian sensor in the system and have them here to investigate what is going on. Well, then, by then, I hope to be long gone. Okay, Cap, it's your ship, but I'm the one who's going to have to fix it if it breaks. The man threw up his arms while muttering something and stomped away to look at a control panel. Ready for the transmission, Cap? Gutenberg announced from deep under his console. Okay, get up here then, Leo said, using his left foot to tap the man's feet, which were dangling in the aisle between the chairs. Squirming out of the console and standing up quickly, the man reached over to his panel and made a few adjustments. Ready when you are, Leo. Leo sat down quickly and adjusted his headset and glanced over his own board as well. Everyone, give me a green light when you are in position. 12 lights lit up, and Leo noted that both Fia and Flavius were stationed on the command deck, where if a blowout of circuits was going to happen, it was going to happen there. Okay, Sparky, it's your show. Proceed, Leo said, spinning around and punching the man's shoulder. Thanks. Okay, everyone, the message is simple. Only 10 words. But this communications array I have set up sends about 10% of the ship's energy out of the emergency encryption frequency. Everyone in their fleet with their communications turned on should get this. Sparky paused and took a breath. The message is as follows. Kissinger, don't go into the valley of the Little Binghorn. This gives reference to two historical events, the first being Henry Kissinger, who was Secretary of State and who negotiated the peace treaty at the end of the Vietnam War involving the United States in the 1970s, and the Valley of the Little Bighorn, which is where General George Armstrong Custer and his cavalry unit were massacred by the Sioux Indians. Leo nodded. The man had made some wise choices with his historical references. Remember, this is 10% of our energy, and usually less than 1% of our energy is used for communications. Say a quick prayer, 'cause here it goes. With that, he pressed a large red button that was flashing on his panel. At first, nothing happened. Then feedback blasted through Leo's earpiece. Leo quickly ripped out the comm unit from his head, as did the rest of the bridge crew. The high-pitched scream continued over the speakers located around the cockpit, and Leo watched Gutenberg's fingers start to adjust the volume. The feedback lessened, almost as quickly as it began. Then Leo started to smell something and knew right away that it was burned circuits. Damage report, Leo shouted. Working on it, Sparky stated with a loud voice as well. Cap, Larry is silent, Yoshida stated with some nervousness in his voice. What? Larry, are you okay? Nothing. What happened to Larry, people? Moon answered first. All readings are normal, Captain. All positronic functions are fully operational and within normal parameters. So why isn't he talking? He is, Yoshi answered. Look at your monitors. Leo focused on one of his monitors quickly down at the bottom of the screen, which followed the line's position relative to gravitational fields, was a small line of words streaming across the bottom. Leo, I seem to have been struck deaf and dumb due to an overload of my audio circuits, but I seem to be functioning fine in all other regards. I am attempting to reroute my listening function at this time. Leo reconfigured his control panel so that he could type words. Larry, we'll begin repairs on you as soonest. Remain calm. Can deal with this.
Words came across the screen again. No hurry. It is very interesting, this not listening all the time to everything. Great, Leo thought. The computer doesn't want to talk to anyone. Any more damage? Leo asked, dreading the results. Then the reports started streaming in. No external communications for 72 hours. No internal communications for 12 hours, except by computer screen. Larry and Winchester would be deaf and dumb as well, and in order to communicate would have to be plugged into a display unit. Okay, Moon and Vershita. Energy level 2, then. Get us into hyperspace, heading towards Picardo. Fia, start assigning repair tasks. Remember to put me on the list. Okay, people, when we get to the Picardo system, I want everything in the ship working.
We hope you enjoy this episode of Scouts Out by A.A. Foringer, as read by the author. This audio production, copyright 2015, all rights reserved. A new episode of Scouts Out is released every Saturday. To get an ebook version of this story, go to smashwords.com, where you can find other stories in the Outfitters universe. The story you have just listened to may contain slight variations from the original text due to translation from written word to spoken word, but overall, the story has not been changed. To contact Aaron, visit his blog at aaforinger.com or email him at aaforinger@gmail.com. He is also on Twitter as A.A. Foringer. He craves your feedback, so get to the comm link of your choice and commence with the typing.